This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 243 for the week starting 2 December 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. WhatsApp the show. The number to use is 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, load shedding is back. Is it time to go off-grid?
Also on the show this week, is Netflix really a major threat to multi-choice? Sennheiser headset software could now do facilitate man-in-the-middle SSL attacks, headphones. And China plans to build a deep-sea base run entirely by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I think there's a horror movie script in that one there. It's Sunday. We're live streaming totally off the grid today at live.techcentral.co.za, and it's time to talk everything tech.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So, yeah, as you mentioned, we are entirely off-grid since we have both been load-shed this Sunday afternoon. And somehow we are still managing to do this live podcast on the internet, and it's working without electricity.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's amazing what we can do with the technology now, although, I mean, you got bigger batteries than I do, so, you know, time is always the limitation with us,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
So if you want to watch a movie or something, your tech usually only lasts 2 hours, then you kind of problems.
So you might be wondering why it sounds like I'm inside a server room at the moment. That's because I have a giant inverter under my desk powering my laptops and the Yamaha mixing desk in front of me. So I do apologize for this humming sound, but it's going to be with us throughout the show, unless miraculously Eskom cuts its load shedding early, but it's due to continue for the next few hours, so I'm afraid we're going to have this this hum for the next little bit, but we thought we'd bring you the podcast anyway this Sunday afternoon, and doing a bit of improvisation to make sure it's we can still bring it to you, even though there's no electricity whatsoever, which is kind of fun and annoying, but also fun.
The show must go on, indeed.
The show must go on. So I actually want to talk a bit about Eskom today, but before we get into all of that, let's do our quiz.
The first question: how many subscribers has MultiChoice added in the past year, according to parent Naspers?
Mars InSight landed on Mars this week. How long in months did it take to travel the 483 million kilometers to the red planet?
The third question: Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg reportedly asked staffers to probe the financial affairs of which billionaire and harsh critic of the social media company?
And which country this week joined Australia in banning China's Huawei from building 5G networks?
That's an interesting one. And the last question: who has been appointed as the new financial director of EOH Holdings, replacing John King?
As always, we'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. We're also doing, by the way, I forgot to mention, we're also doing this podcast via mobile internet today. I couldn't have been asked to go and plug another inverter into my fiber router, so I've just hooked up my phone, and you're tethered on that side as well, I believe, Richard.
Yeah, I've got a pretty decent connection. Yeah, I mean, it's a plus 40 meg connection with my phone, so yeah, that's pretty decent, and the upstream is about 20, so that's, it should handle it, you know.
Yeah, no, it's
but the other factor here is if everybody who's off grid now is using their phone for the next 2 hours to stream stuff.
Yes.
You might get some congestion.
It might be a bit of breakup, but so far, so good. We really are improvising today. But let's get to, we've got a couple of WhatsApp, we've got one WhatsApp message in here from James, which I just want to read quickly. He says, "Hi guys, listening to Sunday's podcast," that'd be last Sunday's podcast, "just listen to the bit on Black Friday." He says, "E-Bucks had a great deal with a level 5 reward. You could get 40% off stuff, including technology. I just got myself an iPhone XS at 40% off. Just mad that I did not get a MacBook or a gaming laptop." And he said, "We need to create a method to share these deals." 40% off an iPhone, yeah, that takes it down to the price it really should be, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a good deal. I mean, look, if you really want to work out the cost, and you're probably going to have to cost out figure out the costs of your, of getting to that level. But it's, you can still get a good deal, I guess, regardless. Sorry, I'm just being a cynic here, but yeah, that is a very good deal.
You do have to be on level 5 rewards at eBucks, though. And I've discovered you can game it, because I've got myself up to level 5. It mainly involves using the app rather than mobile internet banking on the desktop. Push you up on the rewards.
But look, if you're on that level already and you get it, I mean, for sure.
Yeah.
You get a bargain. 40% off, that is an amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing deal.
Yeah, no, it is. So thanks for the message, James. And keep the WhatsApps coming. We'd love to hear from you. The number to use is 071-999-1111. And send us voice notes and we'll include them in a future episode. But let's talk about Eskom. What a mess. So we're back to load shedding. It's load shedding stage 2, both yesterday and today on a weekend when demand is low. I shudder to think what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, how? I mean, it's insane. That was my first thought when the power went out. Yeah, I thought load shedding really goes to area. When a lot of power gets drawn on the system. You can't tell me Sunday is crazy and it's hot today, unless everybody's running their aircon. But no, businesses aren't operating as much. The big corporates aren't running their aircons through their businesses.
Exactly.
Those are usually the things that draw all the power.
Most people don't have aircon.
Yeah,
at home.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy. It's very worrying indeed. But it's got me thinking. I mean, I was sitting here in the dark last night, just thinking about whether it's time to consider going off grid or starting the project of going off grid. I don't know where to start, actually. I mean, I've got two very large inverters, courtesy of Mustek here, which have saved the day many times in the past. But they do.
I think those are a great solution. For the first entry into it. Like, what's your first thing you should get is those inverters. I think.
Yeah. But they are noisy, and the batteries don't last all that long, and they have to be serviced.
But they're cheaper than the next step up.
Yeah, that's true. That's much cheaper. Yeah. You can get a really big inverter for about $10,000. Depending what you want to do with it, it'll probably charge a big inverter. It'll charge your laptops and cell phones for a good few days. You could probably run a home entertainment system off one of these things for a good 5 or 6 hours before it goes flat, depending on the size of inverter you've bought. But you don't want to deep cycle them all the time like that, because it does destroy the batteries. I just use them to keep a laptop charged and a phone charged. That's fine. But if you're going to go to the next step, I mean, what do you look at? I suppose it's putting solar panels on your roof.
Yeah, solar panels, but then you'll need bigger batteries. You'll always need more batteries, and this is the trick with going off grid, and the really expensive part is
batteries.
You need to get a wall. There's a few guys that I've seen that's done this. It's a few double digit thousand rand. I mean, we're probably talking 50, 60, 70 if you're going to power a house properly.
Yeah.
Because those batteries are expensive and you need a whole bunch of them. So a lot of guys put them in the garage, they wall mount them it looks like almost like a Bitcoin mining rig if you look at it, or like a server rig. It works really well. It works really well. You just need to keep power to them. So whether you use solar or Eskom, it's up to you. Obviously, you're going to pay for Eskom. But it's just up that outlay.
Yeah, so I suppose you can just put car batteries in if you've got space. I've seen people do that. They convert a available garage or something, and it's literally wall-to-wall car batteries.
A truck battery, I think they use.
Yeah, something like that. And that's obviously the cheaper route to go. But ideally, what you want to get is one of these very large lithium-ion batteries. I think SpaceX, not SpaceX, Tesla's, what do they call it? The wall-mounted batteries they do. I forget the name.
It completely escaped me as well. And somebody's probably shouting out listening to the podcast. Yes. Oh, I've got it.
I think those are lithium-ion batteries. I think those are much more robust than these typical lead-acid cell batteries that are in these low-cost inverters that many of us use. Including
the power wall.
The power wall, that's it. Yes. Did you Google that?
I see it here. I don't know the company, but there's a listed price here of two that I can see for 83 and 136,000.
Ouch.
For the battery.
Ouch. That's expensive.
The battery. You still need the electronics to do the thing.
Yeah, you need the solar panels.
It's a local company, it seems.
And you want to get...
Obviously,
Sorry,
Robert. That was important.
You want to get... I notice there's some lag on the line, which isn't normally there. I think it's because we're on cellular rather than fixed. There's a bit of...
Yeah, I can hear it. Mm. I'm sure somebody's just downloading something. if the entire neighborhood is just queued up Netflix.
No, it's at ping time. It's much higher on mobile. I mean, on fixed lines, we're getting 1-2 millisecond. Mm. On mobile, it's like 60, 70 millisecond. And you can actually notice it in a real-time conversation like this. But I was just going to say, yeah, you've got to get decent solar panels. You don't want to buy cheap rubbish, and you need the roof space to do it. North facing, preferably. I think you can really get expensive and get these ones that track the sun. But then you're going to have to get a decent, unless you're an electrical engineer yourself, you're going to have to get an expert in to fit it all up for you and make sure it's correctly configured all the rest of it. So yeah, it becomes a very expensive exercise. So beyond getting basic inverters, you're going to end up, it's going to be an expensive exercise. But, with the power outlook, and they're saying now that we're going to have load shedding until the middle of next decade, maybe it's worth investigating.
It is. Unfortunately, so you're going to face a few things. So on the house side, on the house side, it's not just about then getting the batteries and the inverter system set up. You need to change your geyser, because your geyser draws a lot of power. So you ideally need to put that on its own little, those kind of external solar power geyser heaters.
Right, right.
And your lights, all the lights, you should change them to low. I mean, you should do those things already if you can. Mm. You should try and, a lot of the stuff in your house, get to the low power stuff. That already makes a huge difference.
Yes.
Because, you want to try and not drain as much power. Obviously, if you're going to spend a lot of money on a big battery system, it will handle it. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about the rest of us who's going to look at this. But your first step should definitely be, because let's be honest, everything that we've got is basically battery power that we're going to want to likely use in a power outage. Your TV, your cell phone, your smartphone, your computer.
Yes.
Your tablet. So if you can keep those charged for a few days, then you got one part of your problem sorted. The other half is keeping warm water, and then cooking, obviously. Cooking is relatively easy, because we can just do gas or outside if you want. You know, yes. Do a little braai.
Yes.
But then the other thing is hot water. And I think that would be the other thing we should probably look at going to first, is getting those solar-powered geysers. Because once you have hot water all the time, independent of the power system.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, sorry, I just heard a break up there for a bit. But if you can get that, you're already alleviating a bit of a financial pressure from yourself, but also, taking a lot of power away from your Eskom utility bill.
Yeah, the solar geyser is an interesting one. I haven't spoken to anyone who's installed one of those. If you're in the middle of winter, and we know it gets cold in Johannesburg in June, for example, and it's regularly below zero, if you're powering your solar geyser during the day, and there's plenty of sunshine in winter, and you've got nice hot water in the evening, by the next morning is your geyser cold if you need to have a shower?
No, these things are designed to. So they also, they don't need direct sunlight all the time. I mean, they can use with overcast. When it's a bit overcast, a lot of them or the good quality ones will still be able to draw some of that UV power, from what I believe. But people that I've spoken to say they last all day. I mean, a lot of them, I think, are also dual powered with Eskom, so they do switch over when they need to.
Okay. But I suppose if you put your Sorry, Rachel. Carry on.
No, go for it.
Oh, so I was just going to say, I suppose this latency is causing chaos.
It's terrible.
If you wrap your geyser in a blanket or something, it has the potential to keep, at least you'll have warm enough water to bath or shower in the next morning.
Yeah, exactly. It's just getting the cold water that flows into the geyser warm. In a good enough time. But I think most geysers too, if you switch your geyser off tonight, which a lot of people should be doing, or switching it off during the day and then switching it on at night just so that it heats up.
Yeah.
But your geyser stays warm for a long time. It's just the cold water that's coming in that you need to be cautious of. And also remember, when you switch on your geyser from an off state, it's like a kettle. It draws a lot of power for the first hour or two to boil everything. So it's not always the wisest thing to keep it off for too long, because it still uses power at the end of the day.
That's true. To reheat. That's a good analogy. It's like a big kettle on the roof, right?
Yeah, exactly. But look, I mean, a lot of, I think also it's just updating your lifestyle a little bit. It's not, I'm not saying we need to all inconvenience ourselves, but yeah. Even if I do know that these outside solar geysers do last a lot longer than what we think. But even if you just have limited hot water, I think we can make it work. I mean, a shower doesn't take you that long, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe a bath takes a little bit more. And then it's just the other things, the convenience factor of washing dishes and, you know,
and who
the
wants,
like.
Who really wants to wash dishes anyway? Just use it as an excuse.
It's a reality.
But I suppose another challenge is if you live in a complex, you know, where there's a body corporate, there might be some rules around putting the sort of stuff on your roof. In fact, there's very likely to be rules around putting the stuff on your roof. You might find the neighbors are not happy about you if you put a solar geyser on your roof. So which is a challenge, I suppose. But maybe it's time for...
I think those... Sorry, go for it.
I was just going to say, maybe I should go and plug an inverter into my fiber to deal with this latency issue. But I was just going to say that, you know, maybe bodies corporate, I think is the correct terminology, need to get a little bit more relaxed with their rules, given that the energy crisis we're facing in South Africa. Maybe it's time that people got a bit more relaxed about, you know, the sight of a solar geyser or solar panels on the neighbor's roof.
Yeah, but I think those guys also need to, I mean, they need to come together. It's really no point in one or two guys installing stuff. They need to try and find a way to do it for the complex. I mean, isn't that really why you get into complex living? It's a community.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of those guys, the solution for them is to install massive generators. It's probably the cheapest solution, you know, if you look at doing individual units or powering everything.
Yeah.
But it is tricky. It's a lot trickier.
Yeah, maybe a solar farm in your complex, if there's space.
Yeah. Look, solar panels have dropped a lot from what I understand. I mean,
much cheaper.
Yeah, that's almost not the expensive thing. It's. I mean, there's no point in having a lot of the solar panels if you don't have a battery to store it, right?
Yeah. Well, during the day, it's fine because you can run your house on solar during the day. But it's storing it for the evening peak time when you're watching TV or whatever it is, and Eskom decides to load shed you. And you don't need it the whole night. You just need it for a few hours in the evening peak because Eskom doesn't tend to cut the power after 10 at night anyway because the demand drops so low that you can probably get away.
Yeah. I did read another story, and I just quickly called it up here from 27th of November, reading it on IOL. Outrage as Cape Town residents face fines over unregistered solar panels.
I saw that ridiculous.
And the other problem we are facing here is, like you said, the regulation. I mean, we need to – Eskom also – I mean, it's in crisis. But, you know, we can't prevent people from just unplugging from the grid or – I mean, yes, it needs to be done safely. We can't, like, just go crazy. But, you know, we can't do stuff like this where people could potentially be fined because there's bylaws that say you can't – do it. You know, it's
it was a story
crazy.
I read this week. I can't remember where I saw it, but it said that the City of Cape Town or the Western Cape government, I forget which, I think it was the City of Cape Town, said that they're going to impose a minimum electricity tariff on every household because people are starting to go off the grid and they're not collecting the revenues they need to maintain the city's electricity infrastructure. So basically they're saying, if you go off grid, we're going to charge you for electricity anyway.
Yeah, but you see, now we're facing the real crux of the matter. Eskom as an entity is an issue. It's either too expensive. We know it's an issue, right? But again, you know, we can't hamper innovation just at the sake of trying to keep an old archaic system up and running. Yes, it needs to run because it's powering the country, but. Yeah, Eskom, we need to make use of our energy. We've got the best sunshine.
Eskom is a disaster, absolute disaster. I mean, I was reading Peter Bruce in the Sunday Times this morning, and he was arguing that perhaps it's time to put Eskom into business rescue. And maybe that would be an excellent thing. Put it into business rescue, retrench half of the employees, and break it up into component parts and aggressively introduce private sector competition. It's actually the only way we're going to fix this mess.
Yes, and incentivize people to put back into the grid. I mean,
yes,
for crying out loud, let us, you know, people can, we can start making money. That could be, that could work for both people generating. I mean, imagine you have a little small holding out in Mulder's Drift somewhere.
Yeah.
You can't really do anything with your land for whatever reason, so you put up you know, 10,000 solar panels and you feed your community with electricity. Boom. You know, then you've got a little micro business running there. Who knows what else could happen? I mean,
yeah.
we really should be looking at those.
We need to look at these innovative options. Absolutely. I mean, I saw an interesting conversation happening a little bit earlier on Twitter. Andrew Fraser, who's a friend of this podcast, has been on a number of times in the past, was responding to some tweets from Michael Jordan, the ex-FMB CEO. And Andrew made a very good point. Why don't the banks incentivize homeowners to put in solar panels in their homes, perhaps through some sort of refinancing of their mortgage? You know, maybe a lot of people are like 5, 10, 15 years into paying off a mortgage. And it would be in the bank's interest to do so. It increases the value of the house. And it also allows people to install these systems in a way that they can afford, so there's not a massive upfront cost, and just make it part of their mortgage. I think doing that would be a fantastic idea.
Exactly. And now, again, you're empowering little community businesses to become installers for the banks. Obviously, they need to do a good job, certified guys. I mean, this is definitely the way we should be doing it. But Eskom needs to be sorted out first without a – well, not Eskom needs to be sorted – it needs to be sorted out regardless. But yeah, we need to sort out the regulation around this to allow people to feed back into the system. I think that
– yeah.
Because then it's going to give people incentive to roll out – big time.
Mm-hmm.
And also companies importing. Imagine that. Companies manufacturing or importing panels. That's another business.
Yeah.
We can look at.
Yeah, there's huge opportunities here. But no, I think the government is just keen on these massive state-owned parastatals and protect them at all costs, and look at where it's gotten us. So, now that we've depressed the hell out of each other, let's talk about MultiChoice. NSPAS put out their interim results for the 6 months to end September on Friday afternoon. And I had a telephone interview with Bob van Dijk, who's the group CEO of NSPAS. There's some interesting stuff in the results on MultiChoice. We tend to think that, you know, DStv is in serious trouble because of the advent of streaming competitors like Netflix. But if you interrogate the numbers, that sort of idea doesn't really hold up. They added 400,000 paying MultiChoice subscribers group-wide in the six-month period, taking their total base to 13.9 million. That's across South Africa and the other Africa, markets in Africa where they operate. 13.9 million paying subscribers. MultiChoice itself has estimated that Netflix has about 400,000 customers in South Africa. So 13.9 million versus 400,000. Are they really making a big dent? A lot of the growth is coming from the lower end bouquets, so everything below premium, and they have said that there's a lot of churn going on in the premium segment. According to Van Dijk, and I'll write up the interview a bit later this afternoon, but according to Van Dijk, in their sort of customer exit interviews that they do when someone calls up to cancel a service, they are being told overwhelmingly that they're not cancelling because they're switching to Netflix, but they're cancelling because of affordability.
But we've said that since the beginning. I mean, we've spoken about this. I remember we had this conversation too when I left DStv. It was affordability. It was 100% that. Couldn't justify necessarily watching repeats over and over. A lot of the stuff didn't apply to me, for one. You know, I mean, it's a lot of the same arguments we had against. It's just not much more expensive. I mean, it's a great service, let's be honest. It's fantastic to have something there. It's just easy to switch on, can easily record. I mean, PVR and box office, all those things are fantastic. Not that I'm a subscriber, but when I speak to my friends about it, and they've, most of them still have DStv and they have the other subscribing streaming services. And a lot of them say they do want to leave just because of the same arguments.
It's very expensive.
And then there is some repetitive stuff. They don't always want to watch certain things. A lot of the guys obviously say for Super Sport, which is probably the main reason still.
I'm the opposite. I mean, I would subscribe to a DStv package that didn't include Super Sport. I know many people would go for the opposite and would subscribe to a Super Sport only plan, but I'm on the other side of the equation. You know, charge me R400 for a DStv premium bouquet that does not include the Super Sport channels.
Yeah, no, I agree. But then also make the other half available. And then I will see that people do. I mean, there's a lot of great South African content. You know, just having access to movies and stuff all the time. I mean, I can appreciate it. I'm not their subscriber anymore.
Yes, yes. So it's not really, it doesn't seem that Netflix is really hurting them in a big way, not yet anyway. That may change in time, that may change in time, but certainly looking at those Nice Paris numbers, and certainly at the lower end, they're growing very strongly. This is also translated into lower ARPU, however. ARPU, of course, is average revenue per user, and that's not surprising because they've got more subscribers to DStv Compact, for example, than they do to DStv Premium, where they're losing customers. So that ARPU figure will come down. But it's still a very solid business.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I do think that, yeah, I mean, they do a lot of local content, which obviously is a fantastic thing for the business, for the industry. But the lower packages, how much online streaming access do they have?
Everything.
Do you know that?
DStv Now, you get access to all the live streaming channels that are part of that particular bouquet that you subscribe to.
Yeah. Okay, so you get whatever... Okay, that's cool. That's cool because that is also a good part of their business. I recently checked it out, and I mean, I'm surprised at how good it's looking now. You know, the online part of the DStv business. You know, when you want to stream, the online service, streaming. Mm. It's a really smooth looking experience. It's just accosting. Okay. If they somehow figure out how to provide people with either different packages or something, modularize what people can get access to, and you know, give people super support and do it all online. I don't think they're going to lose out as much as what they think they do. They may lose some channels because if people don't watch something, you know, there's no point in carrying it, let's be honest.
It's interesting times. It's a never-changing industry, and they're going to have to adapt, because if they don't adapt, they're going to die. But they know that.
Yeah. Yeah, what is that funny meme? Improvise, adapt, and overcome. Said by what's that guy that's always off the grid and kind of survive in the wild? The bear, Bear Grylls. He always says that. Yeah.
Okay, I missed that one. Okay.
But that is. I mean, they need to adapt to you know, modern era of online streaming and kind of affordability. Let's be honest, South Africa is facing tough times. Everything is more expensive. And the fact that people don't have power is going to make that even pricier for people. You know, things are going to get more expensive.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I think we've got some fun stories coming up, but we're going to take a quick ad break for our podcast listeners. For our live listeners, we'll be back right now.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get giga with it.
But I don't have fiber.
Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Well, welcome back to the podcast. How's it, Rachat?
How's it, Duncan? Are we still on? We still have power. I'm just checking.
We still have backup power. Yeah, still load shedding here. There. Laptops.
My battery is sitting at one.
Sorry, say again.
No, I said my battery power is at 65%. So we've got another hour or so.
Okay. Well, let's soldier on. Now you've uncovered a very interesting story here. Sennheiser headset software could allow man in the middle SSL attacks. How on earth can a pair of headphones cause something so serious?
Yeah, my first thought was, are they going to be able to listen to my music? I hope not. So the software in question is Sennheiser's head setup software. Now, the problem with this was when people installed it, little did they know that they were also installing a root certificate into the trusted router CA certificate store on your machine. Now, to make matters worse, the software was also installing an encrypted version of the certificate's private key, which was not as secure as the developers have thought. Now, with these two things, and this was very similar to the Lenovo Superfish attack that we heard about a while ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this could allow an attacker who is able to decrypt the private key to issue a fraudulent certificate under the other domain that they have no control over. So they could essentially make you think that you are viewing a secure website when you're not actually doing so, allowing them obviously to get hold of all kinds of information. They could also perform man-in-the-middle attacks to sniff traffic when a user visits these sites. So yeah, it's it's a bit of a problem if you think about that.
So sorry, I'm not quite sure I understand how this works. So it's not the headphones themselves, who is it?
No. It's a driver software. It's a software in the driver.
Okay.
It's a certificate to. It's a certificate that the company uses to tell Windows that this is authentic software. You know that pop-up that always pops
yes.
up. Are you sure you want to install this?
Yes.
Now, yeah, this is to do with that.
Okay.
I mean, that is a certificate on your machine. So it can basically then, once it gets hold of that private key, it is then able to then authenticate itself, get hold of, you know, get into your machine and make you, get hold of that on your machine and make you think sites are secure, which they would not necessarily be.
So is this vulnerability caused by Sennheiser themselves?
Well, yes, this was their fault. This is their software. I don't know why they got to that point and how they got that that certificate in like that. But it's not good, you know, that even if you uninstall the software, the trusted root certificate was not removed. So it's not a question of just uninstalling the software.
Wow.
So yeah, I don't know. Do you use Sennheiser? I don't think you use Sennheiser microphones.
No, I'm a Bose man through and through.
Bozeman, yes.
Do you have Sennheisers?
So they've sent out. No, I don't use Sennheisers. Oh, I've got Plantronics. Yeah.
Okay.
So they've issued instructions. There's instructions on how to remove if you want to manually remove it, and they've also set an update from what I can see to fix this issue. But yeah, look, this software rules the world, and if something goes wrong, if the wrong piece of lines of code get inserted somewhere, we're in for a good time.
So if you use Sennheiser headphones, you should probably Google this issue to make sure you're not affected.
Yeah, and just check out that certificates.
So in our offbeat segment of the day, China plans to build a deep sea base run entirely by artificial intelligence. What?
Yeah, so have you seen this movie before? In a few years, we're going to be watching this series on TV somewhere. But so according to a story published in the South China Morning Post, scientists from the Chinese Academy of Sciences plan to construct a research base deep in the South China Sea, and they want artificial intelligence robots to run it. This base could be the first artificial intelligence colony on Earth, says those involved with the project. The researchers will reportedly construct a base between 19,685 to 36,100 feet below the China Sea's surface, though they've yet to pinpoint a specific location. Cables running from the base up to a ship or the platform will provide power to that base.
Why are
they doing that? That's pretty interesting. The base, yeah, that's a good question, right? So let me just get to this point. The oceans, I actually don't, I was looking up the story and I can now, sorry, I completely lost this point here. There we go. The base will have docking platforms like a space station. Robotic submarines will leave the base from the base station to conduct exploratory missions, surveying new areas and collecting data about marine life forms.
Okay.
They'll also collect samples of minerals that the base will be able to collect and analyze autonomously. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to have AI there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I presume, the reason for doing it and using robots is it's too deep for humans.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, and also the kind of effort and resources required to keep people alive down there. Oxygen needs to be pushed down. Food stuff needs to be pushed back up. I mean, it's the same reason why why we're already seeing most, the Mars lander doing its thing. There's no humans on there. It's just much easier to put people on there, and everything is remotely controlled.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense.
So a question obviously then arises. So are our robotic overlords going to rise from beneath the deep depths of the oceans?
What if they find something like alien life form, and the alien life form basically takes over the AI, and thus we get infected and they take over life as we know it? There's another movie.
And there's a global apocalypse. Yeah, there we go.
Because, I mean, we really don't have power. So
that's a great script.
So maybe we'll be safe. Maybe we'll be safe from them. So South Africa will be the last remaining oasis for humanity because of our lack of power, the robots weren't able to take over. I like that idea.
Who are we going to get to direct this for us, Richard?
I think Sholto Copley's the only guy, hey?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we can put this base off the east coast of South Africa or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, good times. That could be fun.
Let's move rapidly along before this degenerates any further. let's do our regular features. Our winner this week is NASA for their spectacular landing of Mars InSight, which I watched live. They didn't have any video from the of the landing itself. I think they said they were going to release it later, though. I don't know if it's come out yet. Have you seen anything?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen anything. No. But I think they may have. There is definitely some footage out there.
Okay. But it's always exciting to see this sort of thing. This spacecraft was en route for over 6 months. It traveled almost 500 million kilometers and then successfully deployed through the Martian atmosphere at a very precise angle, which it had to do. Otherwise, it would either burn up or bounce back into space. Incredible that NASA can achieve something like this from over such vast distances of space and still pull it off. It's just incredible.
It's absolutely crazy. And I saw a tweet by Neil deGrasse Tyson where he said, how, you know, in light of this marvelous feat that we've just done, like you said, how can people still deny scientists when they say, like, we need to look at some of these markers about climate change, you know? It's quite funny. I mean, it is remarkable what we can do if we just put our heads to it and if people just, follow in the same direction, I guess.
Yeah. But they're our winner this week, NASA. Fantastic stuff. And I look forward to seeing what that Mars InSight rover, if that's the right term for it. It just landed there, and I don't think it's going to move around, or is it? I'm not sure.
I think it is, because I saw a report it landed in a sand patch, which wasn't 100% ideal.
Okay.
But, you know, they'll make best of it, and they'll make use of it. I'm sure they'll be moving around.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got the technology to rove, right?
But this
rover around.
So this device, or whatever you call it, is going to its main mission is to drill beneath the Martian surface. So it's not going to be looking at the atmosphere and stuff like that. Or it might be, but its main purpose is to drill.
I'm sure one of the compartments contain a little robotic vehicle, right? I'm sure it must be. I'm sure they would want to check around. Yeah. No, I'm just speculating, but it would be cool to see.
But it's going to drill 5 meters under the surface, and it's going to be able to measure things like, I think, Mars quakes, earthquakes, or Martian earthquakes. It's going to be able to determine a lot about the geology of Mars, how rapidly heat is being lost into space from the Martian surface, and be able to tell a lot about the history of Mars, as I understand it, just from drilling down 5 meters below the lander. One wonders, and I haven't read this, but one wonders whether it's also going to be testing the soils for any signs of life, which would be really exciting.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, they will need to see, and who knows what they will come across if they drill deep, right? Fossils in a where they've been untouched for however long, if there is any, could be a fantastic find.
Yeah, or this might be a sequel to the movie we're planning, where the aliens come up from below, from their cavernous chambers.
Exactly, but I think Elon Musk will be AI by then, and he'll probably be running a few of his own missions.
I see,
in for a good time, that's for sure.
I see he's making noises again about going to Mars himself. Be interesting.
Yeah, he said there's a 70% chance he will go to Mars.
Yeah. And now, I see Jeff Bezos.
His car's already there, so I mean.
Well, I think it's shot straight past Mars, but yeah, he might want it back. But Jeff Bezos, I saw, was also quoted this week saying that he also wants to go and visit another planet.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder. I mean, I've also been seeing a lot of talk about how some scientists, reputable scientists, saying that terraforming isn't really the thing that we all think it could be. And it's not as easy or possible like people claim it could be. So, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we do once we get to other planets. I mean, I'm really looking forward to keeping an eye on this.
Mm. Terraforming Mars. I mean, it's I think terraforming is more science fiction than science. But, you know, even if they were to do it, I would imagine it's a project that takes many thousands and thousands of years.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Look, I mean, the easiest thing that they will do is to build large enclosures like large warehouses or, you know, for lack of a better description, glass domes. And then within those, controlled spheres
grow vegetation, grow biodomes. Crops. Yeah,
exactly.
And
exactly.
Of course, we know Elon Musk is going to have one just so he can grow his marijuana.
And drink his whiskey and sit outside. Yeah,
enjoy the Martian
sunset. Let's also not forget. Let's not forget the. We don't speak about him that often, but Richard Branson. I mean, he's probably going to be joining them very soon. I would imagine.
I don't think Branson wants to go into to another planet, but his Virgin Galactic is certainly going to offer space travel. What's the term?
Space
flights. Bouncing off the atmosphere. I think he signed up to be one of the first to go. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they said there's a possibility they could do it as soon as this December. Did I read something correctly? Yeah, yeah. But they'll probably offer scenic trips as Elon Musk shoots off to Mars. They will be the guys that you can go up with and just see him shooting through space.
Those tickets.
I'd pay for that.
Those tickets are going to be very expensive. I'm imagining hundreds of thousands of dollars each for a short 20-minute flip into space. That is a very low-flying aeroplane, not my inverter. Just almost scraped the top of the house here. Anyway.
Gee, sounded like it.
Yeah. So some good fun there. Our loser this week is Stella Ndebeni Abrams, who was actually our winner last week. She's moved into the loser column quite quickly. But she's seems to be interfering unnecessarily at the SABC and its restructuring and its retrenchment program, saying that we don't want any retrenchments at the SABC when very clearly the SABC needs to be right-sized and stumbling over my tongue today. It needs to cut costs urgently. And here we have a politician wading into it and saying, actually, no, we don't want this to happen. So she's interfering where she shouldn't be interfering anyway. So Stella Ndebeni Abrams, after being our winner last week, is our loser this week. Richard, what's your pick this week?
So I've been, you know, I'm a huge fan of the game PUBG, right? I play it quite often.
Yes, we know this well.
I've clocked to just over 200 hours on it and yet to win a single game. And that just goes to show about my playing ability. But I love the game.
No chicken dinner for you.
No chicken dinner for me. Well, kind of. And this is kind of my pick that I'm getting into. Now, I've also been on this new smartphone that I've been using, which I'm absolutely loving. Been playing some more games because the screen on the Mate 20 Pro is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing PUBG Mobile. And it's a surprisingly good experience.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really blown away by it. It's a free game. Obviously, you can get it on Android or iOS. And it is virtually the same as... Well, it's virtually the same as the desktop version. It's just a lot more... mobile gamified, if I can put it like that. So it's a little bit annoying in the sense that the screen is a lot busier in terms of when you start up. There's a lot of reward systems and all the stuff that they make money off of. Mm. A lot more so than the desktop version.
Mm-hmm.
But that aside, the gameplay on this is incredibly fun, and I've actually had a lot of success. So I mean, obviously, the mobile gamers are a slightly different type of gamer, but I've had a lot of success with, and I've actually won a bunch of games. I find I just find my success rate in playing the game on mobile is a lot more, a lot more profitable in that sense. You know, I get a lot more out of it. So it's a nice game to play when I'm sitting somewhere waiting for something or someone, or just having a beer somewhere. It's quite fun to pull up PUBG in a pub and just play a few rounds. I would advise using with headphones. I think a lot of guys don't play with headphones, so it gives you an advantage if you do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of fun. It gives you the PUBG experience, but on a mobile platform. Same maps, same kind of character style, same weapons. It's just a little bit easy in that, as you run over the loot you need to pick up, it automatically picks up the stuff that you need. So it is optimized for that kind of gameplay. You can obviously move the buttons around, as with most or any of these type of games on your mobile device. So you can move it to your preferred head, where your thumbs go.
Mm.
It's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. And I do, at least once a week, I would have one or two PUBG mobile games. And yeah, I can highly recommend it.
I've seen it in the App Store, and I've been a bit reluctant to download it and have a look at it because, you know, PUBG being a shooting game, I always feel you need the mouse, the accuracy of the mouse to pull off a headshot, for example. Is the mobile screen sufficient to be able to get that sort of level of accuracy?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's not you're not going to have the same exact gameplay as what you do with mouse, obviously. But because it's been optimized for it, so again, the way that you control your controllers work. If you need a little bit of practice, but yes, you can have the same experience. On your phone too, you can ramp up the graphics. So the first thing I would do is put it into. You don't even have to put it into performance mode. Actually, you can just ramp up the graphics in the game.
Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful game. There's a few games out there, like Fortnite is also available. I mean, and that looks even better because it's not trying to be more realistic. It's trying to be cartoony. So that looks fantastic on a mobile device. But yeah, as a more serious game, definitely PUBG Mobile.
Okay.
But maybe for you, another game that I can recommend is Asphalt 9.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably one of the most beautiful racing games on a mobile device. It's so realistic looking. It is fantastic. It's a big game to download, so make sure you're on Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you'll like that. It's a fantastic game.
Well, Just Cause 4 is landing this week, so I suspect that's going to be consuming all of my time this December.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I've got some game time planned myself.
Yeah, December is here. Can you believe it's December? It's crazy. Where did 2018 go? It just vanished.
Yeah, it's gone. Goodbye. It's gone. A few more weeks to go. Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait for the 20th. I just want to shut off for a few days.
And then we're going to, before we know it, we're going to be in the 2020s.
Mm. Yeah, then we truly in the future. Then we can't. Yeah, then we. Oh, that's gonna, because that's in my mind's always been the date of the future, 2020.
Yeah,
sounds so futuristic.
We're already 17 years beyond 2001: A Space Odyssey.
2000.
Yeah.
You see, oh yeah, yeah, but yeah, the fact that we are 18 years now after Y2K.
Mm-hmm. 18 years.
I mean,
since
that's
the .com bubble.
Thought. .com bubble, yeah, and 10 years since the global fiasco.
Yeah. It felt like just yesterday. It's incredible.
Global. It does. And we still, it's the sad thing that we're still reeling from it. I mean, it's just still difficult to get over that one.
Yeah. So, there's one other thing I wanted to ask you about PUBG Mobile. Since there's more in-game purchases, is the base game free?
Yeah, nothing. So none of the purchases affect your gameplay. Everything is cosmetic and... yeah, I mean, that's what really
the
microtransaction thing is about.
Is there a fee to buy the
game?
Yeah,
the base game is free. Yeah, yeah.
It's free. Okay.
No, it's free. Yeah. It's free. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, there's obviously mobile ads in the starting menu and stuff for their stuff, but for their game. But it's free. That's why I think it's such a fantastic, if you want to just see what the fuss is about. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So well worth getting.
So my pick this week is the brand new iPad Pro, which I have in my grubby little paws right here.
What?
I pulled the trigger and got one. It's quite difficult to actually get hold of it because there's such a lack of stock in the country, but I am blown away by this device. It is really, really good. It's really, really expensive, but it's really, really good by the same token. So I got myself an Apple Pencil as well. And absolutely amazed at what you can do with this device. First of all, the iPad is I got the 12.9-inch one. It's so much smaller than the previous generation 12.9 that it actually feels like probably like the old 10.5-inch. It's beautiful. It's so fast. The A12X Bionic processor inside this thing is I can't, you know, I've installed some very, very graphics intensive games in this thing and it just handles them with a plume, no problem. Everything just is instant.
Wow.
There's no lag whatsoever, multitasking between apps, switching between apps, etc. Everything is just happens instantly. So very impressive piece of tech from Apple. My only criticism of it is the lack of a headphone jack. I've got a Huawei 3.5mm to USB-C dongle here, which works fine on my Huawei Mate 20 Pro, but doesn't work on the iPad, and I'm not sure why.
Maybe it's not Apple certified.
I'm just thinking, do you need to have an Apple certified 3.5 mil to USB-C dongle before it'll play music for you? I'm going to have to take a trip past the iStore and ask their guys some questions, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But now that is, you got the perfect device to install PUBG on. I think PUBG would look fantastic.
I'll download
on
it.
Thing.
I'll download it and have a look.
In fact, yeah, I would love to see that. I would love to see that.
Okay, what we're going to do? We're going to.
So, have you been?
Sorry, I was just saying we're going to do an in studio show in the next coming weeks. So
yes.
So yeah, have a look at it. I was amazed. The app that blew me away the most in terms of the support for the Apple Pencil, I thought it was going to be something like Adobe Sketch or something like that, or some one of Apple's own products. But the one that blew me away the most was Microsoft Word.
Really?
Yeah.
What, to draw in?
You can do anything in it, but you can select different types of pen or pencil or markup tools, and you can, for example, take a yellow highlighter and draw through words, and you can take another pen and circle that and make notes, and then you just share it. And it's all supported natively in DocX files, and anyone on a PC can open them. So it's a great...
Oh, wow, that's interesting. But it makes a lot of sense. I mean, Word is supposed to be like a page... replicate thing, really, yeah. Right? You know, you can replicate an A4 page type of thing.
Yeah.
Interesting. Nice.
But the Microsoft Office suite on iPad is looking really, really good. It's basically as powerful as what you get on the desktop. So I'm really impressed with it. And you know, as an editor, I'm sure if any other editors listening, they'd appreciate this too. You know, today you just go through a piece of text and move words around and fix it up, whatever. But with this, you can, you know, you get an article from, I don't know, junior who needs a lot of help. You can actually go through it and mark it up and say, here, you need to fix this. This is why, blah blah blah, and send it back, and then they can work on another draft based on what you've done, which is really nice. But there's some cool apps. Notability is another one that's very good. It allows you to take notes while recording audio at the same time, and then you can listen to the audio based on where you select in the notes you've taken. So it's a really powerful note-taking tool, which is pretty cool. I think Word on Mac has done that for some time, but this is for the iPad. So yeah, generally I'm very impressed with it. It's a bloody expensive device, but it's
so what is that very expensive price, Duncan? Please tell us.
Well, it ranges.
What did it go for?
It starts at 13,999 and goes all the way up to something like 35,000 rand, depending on the configuration you get. I went
for one iPhone XS.
Well, actually, this new iPad, in terms of the configurations, is cheaper than the iPhone XS. But the one I went for is the 256 gig Wi-Fi only one.
That's a good choice,
because I'm always in Wi-Fi. I don't want a SIM card stuck in the thing. And it's perfect. I didn't want the 64 gig because I thought that was too small, but
yeah,
also I certainly didn't need 512 or 1 terabyte of storage on my iPad. Maybe there's some photographers might find that useful, for example, for storing a lot of photographs on their devices, but I don't need that. But generally, it's a fantastic device. It's got Apple's premium pricing, but it's a premium product.
Yeah, you see, now there is something where you can almost justify a larger price tag, because the tech is I mean, it's pretty out of this world, right? I mean, what they can do with that thing. But again, I'm still not getting that phone price. Whoa.
Yeah.
But yeah, this looks like a much better purchase, in my opinion, in any case. So I'm looking forward to getting some hands-on time with that when I see you next.
Great stuff. And that, I think, is our show. Rechard, you haven't added your song pick to the show notes, so I need to see it so that I can add it into Spotify so we can play it at the end of the song.
Sorry, go for it.
I was just going to say, you've gave me a teaser sample of what you want to play yesterday. Mongolian folk metal, is it?
Folk rock. Yeah, Mongolian folk rock. And I will put the details in. Now, it's a band, The Who. Not The Who. The Who. H-U. And it's a Mongolian rock folk band, but I was absolutely blown away. Like, it is so cool. I mean, the music video on YouTube is well worth checking out. The band is called The HU, and the song is Yuve Yuve U. It's Yuve Yuve U.
I have found it.
It's pretty cool, and it is And it is on Spotify, which is even better.
I found it, so we'll line that
up. So let this be the day that everybody marks in the calendar, the day they discovered Mongolian folk rock.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the I actually really enjoyed the music you sent me yesterday, a couple of videos. It's very melodic, but it's got a...
Yes.
It's got almost a tribal beat to it.
They're really good musicians, and looking at the videos too, I always love looking at music videos just to kind of see what the artists are up to and what who they are, and kind of get a sense of what they're trying to portray, and it's very cool. I've added it to my playlist, that's for sure.
Great stuff. Well, we're going to play that in a moment. Let's just do the quiz. First question this week: how many subscribers has MultiChoice added in the past year, according to Per and Nuspat? And that's 400,000, bringing the total to 13.9 million.
Wow. Second question: Mars InSight landed on Mars this week. How long in months did it take to travel the 483 million kilometers to the red planet? And the answer is just over 6 months, and it was launched on the 5th of May 2018. It's not a bad road trip to take, I think.
Yeah, you're thinking of going there in December?
Maybe. It might be a bit boring, you know, for 6 months. I'm just make sure I take enough series with.
Well, can't you get an internet connection streaming back from Earth, and you can watch Netflix all the way?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for Elon Musk to set up that interplanetary internet system of his.
Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg reportedly asked Facebook staffers to probe the financial affairs of which billionaire and harsh critic of the social media company, and that's George Soros.
The fourth question: which country this week joined Australia in banning China's Huawei from building 5G networks? And the answer is New Zealand.
And the final question in this week's quiz, and I must apologize in advance because I know I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this woman's surname, but who has been appointed as the new financial director of EOH Holdings, replacing John King? And let me just look at this carefully before I attempt the pronunciation. Megan Padigadu. Megan Padigadu. And that may be the entirely incorrect pronunciation. But she's formerly the FD at Mixed Telematics, and that's our quiz this week. So we're playing out now with The Who, the H-U, and this is called, how do you pronounce it? Juve, Juve, U.
Juve, Juve, U. You'll hear the lyrics and you'll sing it along soon enough.
Yeah, it's a great track. It's actually a really great song. So enjoy this until next week, when hopefully we are not load-shedded and we'll be back on fiber without the latency. From Rechad and myself, take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao. Ich kann zum Morgen gehen, am Markt und Rotter, ich bin jung.